Hey everybody, Brian McClanahan here. The woke madness in history education is off the rails. Well, how do we change it? McClanahanacademy.com. And because you listen to this podcast, if you use the coupon code PODCAST at checkout, you get 25% off every day, all day, 365 days a year on every class at McClanahanacademy.com. So go to McClanahanacademy.com, use coupon code PODCAST at checkout, and get a real history education at 25% off. If you like this podcast and you want it without advertisements, head over to patreon.com and become a member of the Brian McClanahan Show. For $10 a month, you get all the podcasts ad-free, including video, and you also get a special Q&A podcast. I'm only going to answer your questions, your listener-generated episodes, through those Q&A. So, head over to patreon.com. Get this podcast ad-free, no ads, not even things like this, and you really do help support the Brian McClanahan Show with really cool stuff on the back end. If you follow me for some time, you know I write a lot about the South, and my book, Southern Scribblings, is a collection of many of those essays. It's a great book. You're really going to want it. It tells you why I think the Southern tradition should be preserved and why it should be respected. Get Southern Scribblings at Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com, wherever books are sold online. You're really going to love it. How did the West become so stupid? It's a great headline from a really interesting piece. Short piece, but we'll talk about that on this episode of the Brian McClanahan Show.
It's time to think locally and act locally. Welcome to the Brian McClanahan Show.
Welcome back to the Brian McClanahan Show. Glad to be back on the program. Very glad to be here. Well, this is the $1 million question, or maybe the $1 trillion question, or maybe the $5 trillion question, or $34 trillion question. How did the West become so stupid? And this is the piece that I'm going to read to you as an economic answer, and it's because we spend too much money. But I think it's deeper than that, and it goes back a lot further than just our reckless spending of the last century, or maybe even the last 5 years. The West is stupid. The West is destroying itself. And it's destroying itself not because of economics, which are a reflection of the cultural decline of the West and the political decline of the West. And in reality, this all began, I think, in the 18th century. The West has become stupid because it's too smart. Now, I think it comes down to one word. And as I get into the piece, I'll talk about why that's the case. It comes down to one word, and if you follow this show for any amount of time, you're probably going to know the word that I'm going to use. It's equality. The term equality is destroying the West. And if you go back into the 18th century and you start looking at the Enlightenment, maybe it's that word with the E, the Enlightenment. You start seeing a trend of this push for equality. Now, none of those people in the 18th century believed in the type of equality that people run around talking about today. None of them. Not one. They were more concerned with artificial aristocracy. And they looked around Europe and they saw a situation where you had divine right of kings. You had hereditary aristocracy all throughout Europe, dominating Europe. It wasn't just in France or England, but everywhere in Europe. You had these long-standing hereditary nobles. And you had people that were questioning whether these individuals were really the best suited, the best fit to lead. And if you looked at Spain in 1700, you would say, how did this guy, Charles II, Charles the Hext, become king? I mean, he's completely mentally incapacitated. He's just a Joe Biden, right? So how do we get here? Well, I mean, there comes the question. How do we get Joe Biden if we're supposed to have a situation where we have the best being part of this new natural aristocracy? Well, again, it comes down to equality. When you drive that word, you get disasters. So it's natural to understand why people would be opposed to these absolute monarchies, these hereditary monarchies. They were dangerous. mean, you think about what these things meant for society at large. They were, in France, they were avoiding paying taxes. They had essentially run the government and the finances into the ground. And Louis XIV did this on purpose. I mean, there was only one Louis XIV, just like there was only one George Washington who could manage the United States the way that needed to be managed. And of course, Louis XIV creating this massive bureaucracy, this very corrupt institution, was the only one that could effectively do it. Everyone else was going to fail. Louis XV failed, Louis XVI failed. And then, of course, you get France's unitary state, which produces Napoleon, and then the return of the divine right kings, and then, of course, more kings after that fails with Louis-Philippe, and then another emperor, and then now we have equality in France with the Republic. But it's still a centralized state that has extreme power over the subjects of France in so many ways. And what is France doing? Well, it's destroying itself in the name of equality. Remember, the French Revolution, liberté, fraternité, equalité, right? And it was a more radical push than anything we had seen at any other time in Western civilization, even in the United States. But that term equality has been used in the U.S. quite frequently since 1776 and Jefferson's Declaration of Independence. It's not democracy that's doing it, because you had democracy in other places. Now, you could, if you believe the conservatives in Athens, they blamed everything that was befalling Athens and the destruction of Athens on democracy. This belief that everyone is equal in Athens. All citizens are equal. That's the antithesis of excellence. If everyone is equal and you have extreme equality, then you can never have excellence, because there's only so few excellent people. Now, how has this impacted the West? So we've had this notion of equality. You get rid of the monarchies. And we're supposed to get this natural aristocracy. The best and most talented will rise to the top. The problem is, as James Fenimore Cooper pointed out in his very good The American Democrat, which, by the way, I know you're listening to this show the week of March 4th. We've got just today. I might extend it out another day or two. We'll see. You can get American Populism, $99. Use the coupon code POPULISM at McClanahan Academy on that class. We've also got Andrew Jackson, the Reading Andrew Jackson, on sale. And I've extended it out one more day, How the Supreme Court Screwed Up America. Those classes are on sale. If you're on the email list, you get it. The coupon code for the Supreme Court class is Trump. For Jackson, it's Populism. So you get Jackson or the Populist class for the discount using the coupon code POPULISM. For the court class, it's Trump. But my next class coming out in April is on American conservatism. And we're going to wrestle with this notion of democracy and equality in that particular class. So this is kind of a preview of what we're going to do there. But when you look at James Fenimore Cooper and you look at these philosophers, conservative philosophers of the 19th century, they started seeing the warning signs. We have the Declaration. Jefferson has this lofty language, which he himself downplayed. This is the West Coast Straussians' problem. They don't believe he downplayed it. They believe he believed it. And of course, what happens there is, once you get that, well, you can never close that Pandora's box. And the founding generation probably, I mean, we know they downplayed it. I mean, Barry Shane has written a very good book on this. But there were those who took it and ran with it and said, well, clearly, we have this notion of equality, which becomes equity. And Cooper was sounding the alarm bells about this in the 1830s. You can't do that, he said. Equality and liberty are opposite terms. You can't have liberty when you have equality. And more importantly, you can't have a stable society when you have equality. It just doesn't work. It's impossible. And it's impossible because what will eventually happen is the bottom will rise to the top. And he said it's because of a very important thing, We believe that there's inequalities, and we know they're there, right? I mean, he talks about how we have inequalities in physical stature, and people are better looking, and people are more athletic, and people are stronger. But when it comes to mental capacity, and of course, these kind of things, social graces, there are people that are unequal in those things. But the problem is, people are usually unable to see those inequalities. We can all see the physical inequalities. This is why in America today, we're fine with these things. We're fine with those. We go out and we see athletes go do amazing things in professional athletics, or even amateur athletics when you get the Olympics and some of the things people are able to do. We see all of that. Now, we're starting to try to downplay inequalities in appearance because, you know, well, we can't call these people better looking than these people and these kind of things. We can't do that anymore. That's woke ideology, but you see, that's an ideology that's based on equality. All things are equally beautiful. We know it's not true. But it's not true because everybody discriminates in that particular area. I mean, if you pick a spouse or a partner, whatever it is, you have decided that these things are, you're discriminating against other people to have that person. So we all discriminate in these areas. But we're unable to see inequalities in mental capacity, typically. We know that there are people that are smarter than other people. We just never think it's somebody that's smarter than us. And this comes down to the danger of democracy in a society when no one wants to recognize that some people are smarter than you. It's just the fact of life. No American wants to recognize that somebody might be smarter than them, and that we might have situations where there maybe are cultures that are superior to others. And that would be, that's now gotten to be dangerous to even say. Maybe we have things that are better. All of us, it doesn't matter who you are in the West, are living in the blessings of Western civilization, which was, by default and by example, the superior civilization in the history of the world. It comes out of a very distinct place from a very distinct people. And because of that, it is natively European. Okay? And that's where it comes from. And we think that anybody can adopt Western civilization and it's just going to be fine because we have this belief in equality. But as we've seen, you know, as the United States tries to export its positions on, say, government into other parts of the world, just take the Middle East. As the United States has tried to export its political institutions, they usually fail. Why? Because these people don't have the same kind of traditions and customs and culture as people in the West. And so they revert to their own institutions, culture, political situations, which is not going to be Western-style government. But we expect them to do it. Is it because they're equal with us in the West? Well, I mean, we can talk about equality under the law, but is there civilization? As we look at it and we say, well, is this civilization that they have the same as the West? Do they have the same belief in liberty or same belief in freedom or same belief in the things that we do, the same economic structure? Do they have these things? Well, the answer would be no. And so if we start to weigh these things out, you could say this is subjective. Well, we think ours is better than theirs. And because we live in it, maybe they think theirs is better than ours. Okay. But which one has controlled the world? If we just want to look at that, which one has become adopted by more people around the world? Well, clearly it's Western civilization. So we have inequalities. We have natural inequalities. But again, people can't see it. They don't recognize inequalities in intelligence or social graces or anything like that. They don't want to because we all are the same. And then, of course, that manifests itself in voting patterns and who we choose for candidates. You see, what happens in all institutions as we have this democratic belief system, nobody wants to hire anyone, particularly when you have the ability to do this, no one wants to hire anyone who's better than them. because people are naturally competitive and they don't want to be shown up. And they inherently, they know that some people, oh, that person is going to be better than me at this job. And I don't really want them here because that threatens me. It's an institution. No one wants to do that. So if you have politicians who are no better than you, well, what ultimately happens? You have more people that are not superior, intelligence and other things, and manners and morals. Those people are the exceptions rather than the norm. So the mass will go with the people that are like them because they don't want to be made to feel inferior. I'll give you an example of this in the United States. In the 1960s, 50s and 60s, had Adlai Stevenson, who was running for office. Now, I'm not going to say these people would be better at government. I mean, look, one of the things the left does quite well is try to portray themselves as the educated group. Now, I'm not saying the educated group is going to be any better because the education they're getting oftentimes is is not that good. And we know that these people may not have superior IQs or anything else. They just have more education. There's plenty of videos out there showing the guy that has a trade degree has a higher IQ than the PhD, right? So, I mean, this happens. But what we ultimately do is go to the lowest common denominator, which would be someone like Joe Biden. I mean, look, Joe Biden is a man of the masses, not because he is that culturally, but intellectually. I mean, you look at his academic career, he was near the bottom of everything he ever did. When you listen to him when he was younger, when he actually had some cognizance, he sounds like a moron. He plagiarizes. He does all kinds of things that put him in the category of the mediocre, but the mediocre who rises to power. And I mean, look, this is what democracy does. It finds these things and picks them out. Have we had anybody in office in a long time in the United States who wasn't merely mediocre? No, we haven't. I mean, would any of these people be selected because they're superior in any way unless we were doing it from an ideological disposition? None of them. But that's democracy. Do we have anybody in the Congress, except maybe a handful of people who might be considered to be superior people? No, we don't. And we usually go, I mean, this is not just intelligence, it's also morals and ethics and other things. I mean, look at the people that are running the show. It's the lowest common denominator. Why? Because that's what equality ultimately does. And when you have that situation, you're going to produce negative results. And this is happening all over the West, not just here in the United States. In some cases, in Europe, they're more dedicated to equality than the United States. And what does it produce? Well, bad results, typically, with the people that are selected to run things. Now, it doesn't mean you want to go back to artificial aristocracy, or even aristocracy in general, or anything like that. But this belief in a natural aristocracy that would rise to the top, that gentlemen would control things, has been proven to be incorrect because of this belief in equality, which has become equity. Now, there is equality under the law, which anybody should be in favor of. Anybody, because that is protection for minority groups, of any minority group. And that's something we should be trying to do. Equality under the law for citizens, right? And that's the other caveat to this. Because if you just say we're going to have equality under the law for everybody, if they're a citizen or not, that doesn't apply. Even, I mean, look, the Athenians, the Spartans, the Corinthians, all of these people in Greece, they all believed in equality for citizens Sparta to a high degree. But if you weren't a citizen, you weren't equal in that society. It didn't matter if you were an Athenian in Sparta, you were a second-class person. And they treated you that way. So we have this, and that comes down to citizenship and property and other things. Property always creates, is what Cooper talks about, always creates inequalities once you have that. This is why there are people that want to get rid of property, because, again, it creates equity. The lowest common denominator will rise to the top. So that is the real world word that's destroying everything. This piece says it's something else, and I love the title. I mean, it was so funny. How did the West become so stupid? This is by John Leake, and I saw this at lewrockwell.com. It's from the Peter McCullough MD Substack. But I read it at lewrockwell.com. So it's a short piece, but let me get into it. Almost exactly a year ago, he says, I wrote a Substack post about Dietrich Bonhoeffer's 1943 essay on stupidity. At this time last year, I was concerned that Bonhoeffer's observations seemed to be ever more pertinent to our own era. 1943, on stupidity. We've gotten to a point in the 40s where we've become pretty stupid. And, I mean, what's the point? I mean, why in the 1940s were we stupid? What was the West doing to itself? It was destroying itself. And it starts destroying itself in 1789 with the French Revolution. You might even say it starts destroying itself in 1776 with that line in the Declaration. Or maybe as you get a little further back from that, you get the philosophes, the Enlightenment, and they start destroying, the West starts destroying itself there. But certainly this notion of equality becomes really important in that. When the French Revolution is unleashed on Europe, that is the start of the decline of the West. You tear down the old order, which had its problems, no question. But you bring something that's even more destructive with it. This is why the English or the British were able to control the world, because they had torn down the old order, sort of, maintained parts of it. And they had this hybrid thing. It's Aristotelian in many ways. They had this kind of hybrid thing working where you still had some of the old order in place, but you accepted that you needed to have a safety valve and things needed to work this way. And so you had that. But what happens as equality takes over the continent in particular? All of that, where you would have these fits and starts, where you would have these systems that would be kind of like the English model, it wouldn't work other than in England. This is why it's, again, a specific place and a specific people that are able to do these kind of things. It doesn't work everywhere else. Because you have different cultures, different peoples, different. I mean, it's all in the West, but you have different groups of people trying to make this work, and it's very specific in how these things do work. The Germans had a very decentralized system. And of course, when you get centralization of Germany, and which might have been a little alien to them, and then how that turns into a disaster over time. But anyways, is it? I mean, 1943 is a byproduct of World War I, which destroyed, I mean, it was the real nail in the coffin for any of the old order in Europe. I mean, 100%. But you started, I mean, you had it really begin in 1789 with the French Revolution. You had a conservative reaction to that. It goes away, but it keeps coming back. And now what has the West done? In the name of equality. It's opened its doors to the entire world. And look at what's happening in the West. Look at what's happening in Europe. It's destroying itself in the name of equality. So he says, this morning while reading that Russian intelligence intercepted a phone conversation between ranking German military officers about blowing up the Crimea Bridge, I realized that much of the West, including Bonhoeffer's native Germany, is now officially stupid. We live in an era in which patent nonsense is widely accepted by most of our political class and media, and apparently by at least half the adult population. True. Why? Why is it all believed? Why is it there? Because no one is better than anyone else. No one is morally or intellectually superior. So when you do this, when you pick the people that are just like you, if you're in the half the population, if you're in a situation where the natural aristocracy cannot rise at the top. I mean, I would take Hamilton over anybody in Washington, D.C. just about right now. I mean, Hamilton was a really intelligent person. There's no doubt about this. Washington, way more superior than anybody we've got in the political class now. How do we go from Washington to Joe Biden? Well, democracy, equality, equality. Washington was unequal. People recognize his inequalities. That's what is attractive about George Washington, his inequalities. he was better. Is Joe Biden better? No. Is Donald Trump better? He's got more money. He's really good at zingers. But is he better? I mean, you look at his educational background, not that great. I mean, he came from means. He figured out how to make real estate deals. He made a lot of money. Does that make him better? I mean, this is something that Cooper talks about. Does it make him better? Maybe not. Maybe in some ways, but maybe not. Obama, was Obama better than anybody else? No. How about George W. Bush? I mean, everyone pointed out how George W. Bush was mentally inferior to a lot of people. Bill Clinton? Clinton's not stupid. But Clinton was, was he better than anybody else? George H.W. Bush, Ronald Reagan. I mean, you take your pick, you go back. Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford, Richard Nixon. I mean, some of these people are not stupid. But we're picking people that are like us. And at the end of the day, that does make for sometimes bad choices. Because we don't want to recognize inequalities. He says, and it's not the garden variety stupidity of being distracted and not paying attention. What we are now seeing is a reversion to the intellectual and emotional life of a seventh grader. A perfect storm of emotional dysregulation, lack of perspective, truculence, and gullibility. Maybe it's eighth grade. Seventh grade, might be. Eighth grade. It's your eighth grade history class. This is true. I mean, what you get now in your American politics, or maybe it's just Western politics, Western society, your understanding of government politics is seventh or eighth grade. This is what people have. Our speeches are actually written to that educational level. That is the standard. Now, our seventh and eighth grade level has actually gone down. It's declined in what people actually know when they come out of seventh and eighth grade now. It used to be higher than what they get now, but that's declined. Why? Because of equality. You see? You can't make anybody feel like they're not as smart as someone else. So you cater the classroom to the lowest rather than the highest. This has been a process over the last 20, 30 years or so. Even when I was in school, you didn't do that. Now you do. Everybody's in the same classroom. You have to make sure that the furthest behind never gets too far behind. So you slow it down for everyone else and they become bored. And we don't foster excellence. It's not the teacher's fault. It's what they've been told to do. So this is what has to happen. Because you can't make people feel like they're unequal. That's the catch. It's that term, equality. When did this happen and how did it happen? Increasingly, it seems to me that the genesis of this contagion is that our debt financing of everything has enabled us to become detached from reality without suffering corrective consequences. So he's focusing on the economic ramifications of this. I think, again, it's not because of that. That's a symptom of the disease. The disease is equality, and we're just going to go spend money because we don't care how it's done. We don't really understand this stuff, so we just go out and do it. The disease is equality. Every time it seems that reality might intrude and send us back to concerning ourselves with real things instead of adolescent fantasies and obsessions, another crisis erupts that gives our central banks yet another excuse for another round of massive credit expansion. Since 2020, credit expansion has been accomplished by inflation, which seems to have accelerated and intensified the problem. Inflation destabilizes every aspect of life, including our perception of reality. As Paul Cantor noted in his essay, Hyperinflation and Hyperreality, Thomas Mann in Light of Austrian Economics, quote, everything threatens to become unreal once money ceases to be real. I said that a strong sense of counterfeit reality prevails in disorder and early sorrow. The fact is ultimately to be traced to the biggest counterfeiter of them all, the government and its printing presses. Hyperinflation occurs when a government starts printing all the money at once. That is to say, when the government becomes a counterfeiter. Inflation is that moment when, as a result of government action, the distinction between real money and fake money begins to dissolve. That is why inflation has such a corrosive effect on society. Money is one of the primary measures of value in any society, perhaps the primary one, the principal repository of value. As such, money is a central source of stability, continuity, and coherence in any community. Hence, to tamper with the basic money supply is to tamper with a community's sense of value. By making money worthless, inflation threatens to undermine and dissolve all sense of value in a society. Now, I disagree with this. There's bigger things than money. There's culture. There's tradition. There is this notion of an order, and property is part of that. Money, of course, factors into this. But at the end of the day, there's something else going on here. There is a moral and ethical decline. It is created by a fake and very plastic society that we have. People were pointing this out in the 1930s. The industrial society is going to do this. But when you get this hyperinflation and this expansion of the money supply and all these things, yes, it's a symptom of the disease of equality. Why would you print all this money? Because everybody's got to be a millionaire. Everybody's got to drive the nice car and live in the big house and everything else. Everybody's got to have it. So when you do that in the name of equality and everybody gets the money, well, that's why you got to print it. It comes down to equality. This is why it has to happen. If you have a tight money supply, well, only some people are going to have it. And I mean, in the West, we've decided that everyone needs to be middle class. And so this has generally worked for a time. And it's nice. But what's going to happen as you start to say, well, everyone can't just be middle class, they have to be rich. And we start looking around, we want people to be, I mean, everybody has to be rich. You can't do it. It's impossible. The structure of society can't sustain it. And to do it, you have to print money. Why is the government printing money? Well, because again, it's got to pay out all these bounties for all the different groups. It just becomes unworkable. He says, I thought of this essay when Bud Light's advertising team had its Weimar moment by casting a burlesque actor named Dylan Mulvaney as a spokeswoman for the Bud Light brand. Spokeswoman in quotations, because we know it's not the case. I believe this was the greatest act of stupidity ever committed in a business setting in history. Only people with money to burn would even contemplate such folly, much less go through with it. Here in Texas, Anheuser-Busch products are distributed by Benny Keith. The CEO, Howard Hallam, is a prominent member of my community in Dallas. I was saddened to hear that backlash against the Mulvaney gag created distress throughout the company, which employs hundreds if not thousands of working men. How could the directors of Anheuser-Busch be so disconnected from their customer base and the well-being of their company and its distributors? Well, we know because of equality. Why would they do something like this? Because of equality. It's not stupidity, it's equality. Which, when you have everyone's equally stupid, this is what you get. Or equally limited in their ability to see beyond their own limitations. That's the real issue. When you start recognizing your own limitations, you become freed from this notion of equality. I can't do things that, I mean, I can't, I am terrible at mathematics, for example. It's not my thing. There's no way I could go build. I marvel at people that can build rockets and do things like that. It's amazing stuff. I marvel at scientists and people that can come up with things that I could never think of. It's amazing. Or people that write the way that they do. There are limitations to everyone. Everyone has their natural talents. When you recognize your talents and that people have other talents and you start to capitalize on those things, that's when you have a real society that builds on the natural aristocracy. But if you don't have that and everyone's the same, and no one's better than me, that's when you run into this situation. He says, all of us do stupid things, especially in our younger years. With luck, our stupid acts do not result in our death or ruin. And over time, we gain wisdom. At the moment, the West appears destined to share the fate of these guys. And there's a video clip there, a funny movie. But regardless, this is the situation we're running into. It's not money. It's not money. It's equality. So I don't know where to go. I mean, how do you undo that? You can't. You can't undo it. It's already done. You have to try to create an environment where people start thinking maybe a little differently. But it's difficult to do. You're pushing against, I mean, as I said, you're climbing Mount Everest in flip-flops and shorts. No oxygen. You're just going to get to the top somehow. It's going to be nearly impossible. But that's the point. It's equality. All right. See you next time on the Brian McClanahan Show. See you then.